In a world in which movies struggle to find plot, Alan Adams of The Main Edge breaks it down for you in Pass the Popcorn. Now on Downtown with Rich Kimball.
Oh, yeah. Let's all go. Alan Adams is here, the Hall of Famer, joining us in studio after a busy weekend of entertaining the people.
Yeah, no, it was quite a weekend. On Friday night, we had a focus group show. We did our first ever collaboration with Story Slam Bangor. First, don't think it'll be our last. It was a pretty successful outing, all things considered. Like a couple little speed bumps, just because we'd never really done that sort of format before, like just figuring out the flow of the show. But as far as audience reception and the satisfaction of the participants, I think like everybody seemed to have a really good time. And I know Jesse Moriarty, who sort of runs that whole deal. She came up to me immediately afterward and was like, "Well, we need to do this again. I'm not sure we can do this without you guys." And I'm like, "Well, that's very sweet. I think you'll be fine." But yeah, we certainly left the door open for going down this road again sometime in the future. Because again, it was just a wonderful way to sort of, you know, I don't know, change things up a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, we still get to do what we do, but we get to do it alongside people doing what they do. And there's something really wonderful to be said about that. And I'm all for collaboration in the arts. Mm. And this was a really wonderful way to do it. A successful experiment,
yeah,
as they
great.
Say.
And then last night you were part of the cast, as you often are, for Ready, Set, Go at Penobscot Theater.
Yep, we did Ready, Set, Go there on the cast of their show that's currently up, Ironbound. Which if we may want to chat about that, because I actually saw that this weekend as well. So if we wanted to chat about that a little bit later, we could. But yeah, it's a format that I've really grown to love. Like, I love the idea of creating like a linear sort of narrative, such as it is. Like, it's improv, so it's not necessarily as linear as you want it all the time. But like telling a story from beginning to end is really a lot of fun. And to use, you know, the pre-existing set, and to have like to have that sort of as your foundation when you're putting a show like this together. And you know, I mean, it's always just a tremendously talented group. Like, it was Jen Shepherd and Lawrence Fingerhut from Improvocadia, Shelby Burton, who's a very gifted improviser, and Jason Preble was there as well. And so, you know, we got up there, we did a show about robots on the moon, and you know, it's just sometimes that's how it goes. You go from you know, celebrating the Harvest Festival to actually my dad is a robot. You know, that's just how improv goes sometimes.
Right.
And you just you go and you you know, and you know, when I'm given the opportunity to sing a song called Moon Village in full Andy Williams style, I'm going to do that.
Nice.
You know, I don't know how much the audience enjoyed it, but I certainly had a good time. So that was really fun. And in between those improv performances, there was a lot of fun stuff. I saw Ironbound. We watched the Sunday matinee of that show.
Well, let's talk about, because I've heard from a couple people that it was tremendous.
Man, I tell you what, I am always enamored of small cast, of like hard hitting like small cast shows, and whether that's dramatic or comedic, like I love watching a very small, tight ensemble sort of bring a story to life. And there's only four people in this show. It's directed by artistic director Jonathan Barry, and it's basically this wonderful, almost triptych. It's set in two very distinct periods of time, all revolving around this one basically bus stop. It's a bus stop in New Jersey, and we follow this woman as she, a Polish immigrant, as she deals with various relationships at different points in her life. There's one set in the mid 90s, there's one set in the early aughts, and there's one set in the early 20 teens. And so, you know, she is the through thread, and you have these different characters, all men, who interact with her over the course of that. And it's powerful stuff, man. Like, it's the sort of challenge that I'm always grateful to see. I always wish more people would go see these sorts of shows, simply because it makes like higher attendance, makes it easier to program this kind of stuff. And again, like I like put it on a stage, I'm probably going to enjoy it. Like that's just who I am. But I really love the idea of there being a variety. Like it's like you can't eat McDonald's all the time. You know what I mean? Like right. you can't always have candy for dinner. So to have these wonderful sort of varying kinds of pieces, I think that's the sign of an artistically healthy organization. And you know, it's they've got one more week. They're running through this coming Sunday. So from the production values to the performances, like all four performers are outstanding, including our friend Brad LaBrie, who is in it, offering up a surprisingly passable Polish accent, I might add, and playing a decent harmonica.
Wow.
Both things I don't think he knew how to do when he arrived to do this show. So, you know, just indicative of the sorts of lengths that we will go to make these sorts of shows happen. So, yeah, just an excellent piece of theatrical storytelling, and the sort of thing that, well, go out and see it, because I know I would like to see more stuff like this, and frankly, I think you should too.
And we'll talk movies in a moment, but do want to mention, while we're on the subject of Penobscot Theater, that they released to the public next season, which is the 50th anniversary season. And I love what Jonathan and Jen and everybody involved have put together, honoring the past, but also bringing in some new plays to challenge the audience.
Well, that was always going to be tricky. And, you know, hats off to Jonathan, because like he, like in a lot of ways has faced some perhaps unexpected, obstacles isn't the right word, but like you know, for his tenure, because of the timing of his hiring, like the this season kind of came together in a bit of a piecemeal fashion. And then with the 50th, this idea of wanting to honor what came before, while still putting his own stamp on the organization, like that's a tough line to walk, and I feel like this season does a really good job of that. Whether you're talking about bringing back something from, you know, the tail end of George Vafiatis' tenure with Crimes of the Heart, which they're opening the season with.
Written by Beth Henley, but with a big assist from her then boyfriend, Stephen Tobolowsky.
I was not aware of that.
Yeah.
That's going to be directed, I believe, by our friend Julie Lisnett.
Oh, really?
I believe she's humming that one. And then I was adamant about this in every conversation that went along with the 50th anniversary show, and so I'm glad I was not alone. I made it very clear from the get-go, like if you're bringing stuff back, like you gotta do Christmas Carol.
Absolutely.
You gotta, like, it's just, you know, it was such a huge tradition in this area for such a long time, and I understand why we went away from it. Like I really do.
Yeah.
Like in some ways it did get a little bit stale, I think, but it's been a while since we saw Christmas Carol on that stage.
But apparently, it was the most requested show to bring back,
right? Which I think says a lot. And yeah. We're at the point now where we've got like some of these kids who are coming up, like through the Dramatic Academy or otherwise. Like, you know, you've got kids, you know, 10, 11, 12 years old. They haven't seen A Christmas Carol on that stage. And, you know, as someone who saw it when I was a kid, and someone who was in God only knows how many iterations of it, like I got a real soft spot in my heart for that show. So I'm really excited.
Do they need us back to be the Beatles again?
Oh man. If we, that's the more esoteric and experimental Christmas carols, we're always a hoot. But yeah, this one looks like it's going to be a lot of fun. And then for the musical, for their big extravaganza this summer, they're going to do Little Shop of Horrors.
Yeah.
Which, you know, that's one, like, man, people love that show.
Yeah, absolutely.
People love that show. And, you know, I have to say, I'm no longer as young as I used to be. I don't know that I am prepared to be the puppet guy again. that was a wonderful experience, and I'm glad I got to be part of Team Audrey 2 alongside Ben Lehman, who is the voice of the plant,
right?
Back in the day. But I think that ship has probably sailed for me. I just remember wearing the like a fisherman's vest filled with ice packs because it was so hot in that giant puppet. You know, memories. And then of course a lot of wonderful lot of wonderful new selections as well. The original play from Brent Ascari, who I don't know if do you know Brent at all? Like,
is he an improv guy? I know the name.
Yeah, like he's been on the scene for a very long time. Yeah. But I guess his work as a playwright is really starting to gain some momentum.
Okay.
In a wider sense. Dirty Deeds Down East sounds like it's going to be a lot of fun. And then other shows, the Two-Hander Constellations, which mm-hmm. is a marvelous show. I'm very much looking forward to see what happens with that. And we were talking off air, the extremely cool and extremely weird Mr. Burns, a post-electric play is going to grace that stage. And, it's the one of the bunch that I'm actively like, I don't know, I'm not going to campaign for it necessarily. That's not really my style, but like I have made my feelings known that I would like to be involved with that one
is Mr. Burns from The Simpsons.
It is. I could sit here and try to give you a synopsis, but it's just, it's so much better to just be like, I don't know what I'm getting into, because, man, there are a lot of wonderful surprises in that show.
Excellent.
But yeah, it really sounds like a great season. And then in the midst of all that, I spent about an hour yesterday morning trying to chase a squirrel out of my living room.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
How'd it get in?
I don't know.
Oh, my Lord.
Yeah. Probably through one of the many holes that are still in the walls of our house. But yeah, no, I'm sitting on the couch having some coffee, chilling out with Stella. And I hear this rattling sound, and I'm like, oh, because we've brought a kitty condo into our living room for the kittens.
Hmm.
I hear this rattling sound, and I'm like, because Sheridan had left. I'm like, did she bring the cats down? Are they in? And I get up and I look over, and there's just this little squirrel like clinging to the side. And it's no secret, I'm terrified of rodents. Just scared to death.
With you.
And so I have to be like,
did you scream?
I did. I did.
High pitched?
No. It was much more guttural than that, I think. And of course, Stella was of no use at all.
Right.
She's like, oh, what is the? Nope. I'm gonna go upstairs.
Yeah,
like,
well, squirrel. They don't belong here.
Yep.
I'll see you.
So it was a lot of me just shouting the word no over and over again
to the squirrel.
Yep. Doing like the little, like just doing that. Over again,
and try to speak their language.
Oh my
all.
God! And so I'm trying to prop the door open. It's closing. All this stuff. Sheridan has this wonderful video from our Ring camera, where it's just like you just see the door slowly shutting, and you just hear me just shouting over and over again that word that starts with F and rhymes with duck, just over and over again, before finally. Managing to trap the squirrel in a blanket that I then threw in a box that I then took outside and basically threw off the front porch. and then went down, sort of, pulled the blanket out, and the squirrel tumbled out and then went about his business and probably just immediately went back into my house. Like, I don't know, because we still don't know where it got in or anything like that. But we didn't see anything nibbled on or anything.
That's good, because they can do damage.
Yeah, so I think, like... I mean, it got in somehow, and so if it got in, probably another one can get in at some point.
But it's going to tell its friends about the ride it had getting out of there.
One would hope. Like, one would hope that warnings would be issued. So that was how my day sort of began on Sunday. So it was just...
I want to see the video. I'm not going to lie.
Oh, my God. Yes, I'm sure Sheridan will happily... I'm not wearing a shirt. Like, it's a whole thing. It's like discount cops out there. Like, I'm just... Oh, Lord. It was something else.
No, bad squirrel. Bad squirrel.
No, no. Oh, ridiculous. Just ridiculous.
He's telling his buddies all about you.
So that was so that was my Sunday morning.
And then the guy would clap. He'd go, hey, like this. That's crazy.
All right, Alan Adams with us. But we have a little time left. Should we talk movies?
Yeah, I mean, I got one.
Okay,
if you want to talk about it.
Sure, sure.
I did not get to the movie theater, as you might imagine from all the doings that I got up to. But I did get a chance to watch the current big one on Netflix, The Mother, starring Jennifer Lopez.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Which we've discussed my weird affection for the Jerry Auction subgenre, and while J-Lo probably wouldn't appreciate being labeled such, I mean, she is a woman in her 50s doing an action movie. So, it's one of those things where you just see someone working out what comes next in real time, kind of. Like, it's the sort of movie that would have gone straight to video back when straight to video was a thing. I think that's the gist. It's directed by Nicky Caro, and again stars Jennifer Lopez as a never named person. Just she's simply referred to as the mother. We meet her when she's trying to make a deal with the FBI for her own protection. She's trying to turn in. Oh, like there's an arms dealer, and then there's an ex-British Special Forces guy, and they both are up to shenanigans that kind of cross over, and she's playing both sides against the middle, and also, apparently involved in intimate relationships with both of these gentlemen. She's trying to make a deal with the FBI, but they find her, and... They attack the house, and that's when we find out that she's actually super pregnant, and she gives birth to the baby. And the FBI director shows up. It's Edie Falco who's in this movie for 45 seconds. Like, I'm not entirely sure. Like, I don't know if Ms. Falco has some sort of like deal with Netflix or whatever, or just happened to be in the building. I don't know. But she shows up and is just like, okay. We're mad at you because all our FBI guys are dead because of you. So you're going to sign away your rights to this kid. Again, doesn't make a lot of sense. Not entirely sure why this is all happening, but that was the deal. So she does, and then she heads off to Alaska. And then she lives in Alaska for, and then we get the 12 years later title card. and the bad guys from before have figured out who the kid is, and so they're going to try to get her, and the mother has to come back and try to save her long estranged child. That's pretty much it. Like, I could get into the details, but they don't matter. It's one of those movies where I was perfectly fine while I was watching it. But I was actually talking to Sheridan as I was heading out the door to come here. I was like, yeah, well, I'm going to talk about The Mother. And she's like, oh, you finished it. And I was like, yeah. She's like, how did it end? And I'm like, how did it end? it's one of those things where it's
made
like
quite the impression.
Yes, it's a largely forgettable movie. And again, like I should say, as far as action filmmaking goes, like J-Lo's a passable action star. Like, she's reasonably athletic. She's in good shape. Like, she can handle that aspect of it. There were a couple of pretty egregious, like, it's like, stuntman, J-Lo, stuntman sort of intercut sequences where you're like, you could pretty clearly tell who's who at what point. The movie does fall victim to the general, what do we call it? Sloppiness, I guess, that comes with Netflix movies, where they don't necessarily always worry too much about the details, where they're just like, things are happening and you're like, I never looked away, but it feels like I missed something. Just like details being skipped or glossed over or things like that, which leaves some unanswered questions over the course of the narrative. Some of the effects work and action sequences are a little cheesy, but it's all fine. And the reality is this movie exists because Netflix was like, oh, we need something big for Mother's Day weekend.
Boom.
And there it is. Well, let's have J-Lo be a decorated U.S. Army sniper who goes into private business as a arms dealer or something.
Completely believable.
Again, it doesn't make sense, but movies like this aren't intended to make sense. They're just simple, turn your brain off entertainment. And if you're ready to sit down and turn your brain off, you'll be fine. You'll enjoy yourself perfectly well, and then you can move on with your life, never thinking about this movie ever again.
Alan Adams talking movies with us here on Downtown. By the way, you may have heard us mention, we're going with this temporary tattoo thing.
Oh, we're going to do it?
Well, we're 3 for 3, because you already said you would do it. Chad Finn said yes. Actually, he volunteered to go to the pier at Old Orchard and get a real one.
Nice.
And Bob Ryan even said he would do it if it's temporary.
Very good. Now are we doing something small, or are we doing like a full on like Affleck like back piece?
No, I think something, you know, small and subtle, that all we want is, you know, a picture of our Hall of Famers sporting their downtown tat.
Yeah, I'm just I'll get it right on my neck.
I thought you were gonna pull a Tyson and you'd have to shave.
So. Yeah, no, but you put it on my forehead. I'll just spell out downtown on my forehead.
Right. If we do that, we'll do it backwards. You know, so look in the mirror and you can read it. It'd be great.
But yeah, no, I'm 1,000% in. And you know, if you need me, like I know you mentioned you're trying to get him on sometime this week. But if you need a little bit of extra peer pressure for David Roth, just let me know, and I'll reach out on the social media and be like, hey man, all the cool kids are doing it,
right? Fellow Hall of Famer here.
You know what I mean?
Guys are in the club.
It's just, and I mean, really, Roth, you're better than Bob Ryan, really, really.
We were going through the list. He'll do it, I think.
Yeah.
Tom Tobolowsky will do it.
Oh yeah.
I suspect we can get Perry Gilpin to do it. Maybe Paula Poundstone. Ken Burns is the big one.
Ken Burns would be that would be pretty fantastic. I'll be honest with you. I don't even know how you're going to sell it.
Like, We're just going to send it.
Yeah, just mail it just in an envelope, loose, like no explanation, no note. Just be like, the hell is this?
And then I'm going to enclose a note. And it's going to look like a ransom letter. It'll be, you know, it'll be letters from magazine articles that say, post picture of tattoo on you. Love downtown. See what he does.
I love it. I love everything about it.
Yep, there you go. Thanks, Al.
My pleasure.
See you next week. Alan Adams with us.